Football Weekly is on the air.
Here's the snap.
Drops back. Throws the ball. The long ball's outfield. Pass is tipped, and it is intercepted. Dallas only breaks the tackle. He's still going. 50, 45,
40, 30.
He's going to go all the way.
Runs left to the 20, to the 10, to the 5.
And he strikes into the end zone.
Touchdown!
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 This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish. Welcome to Pro Football Weekly, an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up this week, a big trade in the NFL.
Significant injuries taking their toll in Denver and in Atlanta, and could the Titans be the next team to make a big trade?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with the editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee. And the Way We Hear It features news and information from around the NFL. And we're joined in The Way We Hear It by Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner blog. And guys, let's start right away. Injuries taking a toll after just 2 weeks in the NFL season, especially when you look at two highly rated teams, the Denver Broncos and the Atlanta Falcons. Hub, let's start in Denver. Left tackle Ryan Clady out for the season with foot surgery. Boy, what are they going to do on the blind side of Peyton Manning?
Well, the answer they hope is Chris Clark, and he's quite frankly a veteran. I don't want to say journeyman, but he's been around 4 years. He has no significant starting experience at left tackle. He was the plan, so they're at least comfortable with that. But you're talking about losing one of the best, if not the best, left tackles in the NFL. And it's really kind of a cumulative effect there as well. You got to remember, Dan Coppin was supposed to be their starting center. He went down for the season during training camp. So you've now got backups in the ball exchange with Manning and protecting his blind side. And then you got, I think Eric Edholm's going to join us here as well. You know, when you realize the defensive line problems with Von Miller, I know he's a linebacker, but he's an outside rushbacker, and he's gone for at least 4 more weeks. And, of course, Elvis Dumervil is in Baltimore. You talk about winning championships, winning Super Bowls in the trenches, and you just have to wonder, Eric, how much these Broncos can stand and survive with this latest injury.
Yeah, the Ravens, I think, made enough plays in the playoff game against the Broncos that kind of led you to believe that, okay, this was an area that they had to be strong in this year. We'll see what Chris Clark can do. 6 career starts. You mentioned the Copen injury. Manny Ramirez has actually played pretty well in his place, so I think it's nice to know that they can get by with one loss. But two, arguably the two most important positions, that's tough. And on defense, they're already fairly thin. I know Sean Phillips has helped out. They've got Sylvester Williams, the first-round pick, in a reserve role right now, so there is some depth. But, the more bodies you lose, all of a sudden we can start to see the Broncos kind of come down from their perch.
You know, guys, when you look at the Atlanta Falcons, I mean, here's a team that a lot of people felt was, along with San Francisco and Seattle, a favorite in the NFC. They may still be, but injuries are nicking away at them. Sean Weatherspoon, Steven Jackson goes down now for a couple of weeks, and Croy Bierman out for the season. Their depth is being tested early.
It really is, and I think that the Sean Weatherspoon injury is not one that you can overrate the importance of. It really is him and the other Missouri kid, William Moore, at safety, who are kind of the anchors of this defensive unit. When you look for playmakers on the defensive side of the ball, Weatherspoon, again, along with Moore, probably one of their most important guys. Croy Bierman is a nice situational player. It's not a household name, but he's a guy who's made a lot of plays for them through the years. And then on the offensive side, Steven Jackson, I mean, that was the major change to the offense, Eric. That's what they did to say, hey, we're going to be better this year. Jackson started, struggled early, but then had the big touchdown in game 2 against the Rams, the play on which he got hurt. He looked better late in training camp and preseason. And without him, I mean, Jacques Rogers is a nice player, but he's not a guy you can give the ball to 20 times. So these are really significant losses for the Falcons.
Yeah, I think so, too, especially when you consider who might be the replacement for Weatherspoon. Joplu Bartu, maybe one of the best names going in the NFL these days. Undrafted kid, Texas State. I mean, I know they've done a nice job at finding talent here in Atlanta, and I really appreciate the job that Thomas Dimitroff and that front office and the scouting staff have done. But depth has always been the worry, and you worry how much that attrition is going to have an effect, especially on defense. Jackson, the good news, it's a short-term injury, but we may not see him again till week 7 after the bye. I know they can do some stuff with Snelling and Rogers, and maybe Antoine Smith can step up or somebody like that, but that's a loss. There's no doubt about it.
Let me ask you about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers guys. Greg Schiano in his second season off to an 0-2 start, heading into a big game against Bill Belichick and the 2-0 New England Patriots. Hub, what's going on down there in Tampa? And is patience wearing thin this early in his regime?
Well, he's obviously having trouble with some of his key players. Now, the relationship with quarterback Josh Freeman is complicated, and it's interesting because Freeman is pretty much universally acknowledged as a solid organizational guy, a solid guy in the locker room, a player that his teammates like. And yet, from the time Schiano got there, I've heard from certain sources that they're just not convinced that he's a franchise quarterback. So they turn around, they draft Mike Glennon out of North Carolina, and they bring him in. Now, Freeman still got the job. He still has every chance to own the job. And yet, you know, it shakes your confidence. Freeman hasn't complained. Then there was the silliness about the team picking new captains, and Schiano gets accused by someone in the media of rigging it. That was just stupid, and even Freeman knew that. But the reason, I suppose, that people want to speculate there is because the relationship is strained. But now you get Darrelle Revis, Eric, and you know, why is he there? Because he was trouble in New York. Well, surprise, surprise, now he's going to be trouble in Tampa. I don't know how much of this to lay on Schiano. The people I talked to down there say he's very much in control. Certainly he's very solid with Mark Dominic, the GM, and the Glazer family, and yet when all your high-profile guys are sniping at the coach, you got to start to worry about what's going on in the locker room.
Well, yeah, I think you're right about Revis in terms of, you know, he kind of pushed the Jets around a little bit, and it got to the point of breaking where they had the deal, and they felt like they had to trade him, even with a stout defense, because they knew they're rebuilding, and they didn't want the financial considerations to weigh down their cap, and the possible headache in the locker room, the, you know, I'm as big as anybody in here kind of syndrome. So, yeah, I think that's a concern. I mean, he pushed them around to get a new contract. Even though he was playing at a great level in New York, there were times where you felt like he was sort of putting himself above others. I don't know if that's true. That was just an outward appearance, and you know, maybe there's something going on down there. I know he wants to play more man defense. I know they're playing a lot of zone, so that factors in. But some of this seems like a personal crusade for Revis to reestablish himself as the best corner in the league. Let's give it some time. He's coming off an ACL surgery. He's got some work to do.
Eric at home of Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner. We'll be back with more Way We Hear It when your current edition of Pro Football Weekly continues. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, featuring our editor, Hub Arkush, with news and notes the way we hear it from across the NFL. And we welcome in USA Today's Arthur Arkush with us on this segment. Fellas, let's begin. A big story this week. You hardly ever see this happen in the middle of a season, or even at the beginning of the season. The Colts and Browns make a trade, and the Browns sending Trent Richardson, their running back, to Indianapolis for a first-round draft choice. Hub, let's start with you. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's fascinating from both sides, so I'm going to start on the Cleveland side, and then I'll kick the Indy side over to Arthur before we go back and forth a little bit. I think this is as simple as Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi. They're going to rebuild this team in the image that they want it built in. They gave this head coaching job to Bob Chudzinski. Chudzinski's offense is not an ideal fit for a between-the-tackles banger like Trent Richardson. Richardson doesn't give you a lot of movement. He's not a guy who's going to, you know, go on a lot of long runs. He's a grinder, and you know, he'll catch the ball out of the backfield, but that's not his specialty. So I think they said, hey, we may have an opportunity here to get another number one pick. We know how valuable those picks are. The other issue that I've had with the Richardson pick from the beginning is I don't trust his knees, his legs. I mean, he's had a knee procedure, albeit arthroscopic. He missed a good part of the offseason program this year with a shin injury. Running back with bad wheels is always something that scares you a little bit. Plus, this is the one chance. This is that free season, the honeymoon period that Lombardi and Banner get. It wasn't their move. It was Mike Holmgren and the prior regime who actually traded up in front of the Vikings in the first round when the Vikings had Adrian Peterson so that they could draft Trent Richardson. Now, granted, Peterson was coming off the ACL surgery. Nobody knew what he was going to do, but everybody knew the Vikings wanted Matt Khalil. So they're cleaning house on this and saying, this was somebody else's problem. We're going to move on. We're pretty good with young talent on defense. Arthur, I think they're looking for a different kind of young talent on offense, and they found a willing trade partner in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I'll throw a fascinating stat at you that kind of illustrates just how aggressive Ryan Grigson has been since taking over as general manager of the Colts. In two off seasons, there have been 79 trades consummated in the NFL. Ryan Grigson's responsible for 20 of them, over a quarter of those moves. So, look, you know, they lose Vic Ballard, they lose Dwayne Allen, their fourth and third rounders from last year, respectively, for the season. Grigson knew he needed to add a little bit of toughness, a little bit of versatility. I think he certainly solved that. by going out and getting Trent Richardson, a guy that they believe is a bell cow back. It's a guy he liked a lot coming out of Alabama. The question is, did they give up too much? A first rounder, we know the value of running backs these days are not what they once were. You see guys like Alfred Morris last year get plucked, I believe, in the sixth round and have such an incredible season, and we've seen some other undrafted guys, later round picks, GMs hitting on them. So if Richardson is in fact that guy that the consensus felt was the best back to come out since Adrian Peterson, the kind of guy that can really change the face of an offense, then it's a great move. But if they're getting the guy that's averaging 3.5 yards per carry from Cleveland, and he cannot turn out to be more effective despite the fact he's going to have an actual passing offense led by Andrew Luck now, then there's going to be a lot of people that are questioning this move a couple years down the road.
And hey, Wayne, one other thought on this. If Bruce Arians is still the offensive coordinator in Indianapolis, I don't think that Grigson and that group does that. But with Pep Hamilton now as the offensive coordinator, he needs a player like Trent Richardson to do what he wants to do, and I think that should not be overlooked in this conversation.
And Hub, let's talk a little bit about the Browns and their objectives with now two first-round draft choices in next year's draft. Quarterback's got to be one of their keys, right? I mean, you know, Whedon's going to be out this week. They're going to use Hoyer at quarterback in this week's game. Whedon will be back soon. He has a thumb injury. But is he the quarterback there in the future, or is one of these picks going to be used on a quarterback next year?
Oh, they're going to take a quarterback. Wayne, Whedon's going to be 30 years old next year. Now, we've known that all along. We've made a big deal out of it, but he hasn't arrived yet. And again, it's consistent with what I said. This is cleaning up the old front office and old organization's decisions and putting our own. Is this could be another great quarterback draft. We don't know all the kids who will come up, but we know McElroy's coming out of Alabama, and he's a first-round pick. We know Teddy Bridgewater's coming. Everybody's raving about him. I personally don't think Johnny Manziel is a first-round pick. I think he's more Tim Tebow, but we'll see. He's going to be there, too, with two first-round choices. Now, the funny part about it is they're also in the Jadeveon Clowney Derby. I mean, Cleveland could end up with the first pick there. They're not very good right now, but they're certainly going to be in a position to get the quarterback they want now that they've got the extra number one to work with.
Let's move on to a trouble spot down in Tennessee. Wide receiver Kenny Britt. You know, Hub, wide receivers are prima donnas at best, and sometimes they're flat-out trouble. And talk a little bit about this situation with this youngster, and it looks like they may try to move him.
I'm going to tee it up and then defer to Arthur, who had been on the Titans beat for a number of years and knows the Kenny Britt story well. The bottom line is that much of his trouble has been off the field. He's an immature young man. I don't think he's an evil young man, but he's been in trouble constantly. He has stayed out of trouble off the field, I think, for maybe the longest stretch since he's been a Titan, but then he tears the ACL last year. He's trying to come back from it this season, and then last week, apparently several blown assignments. He gets sat down during the game, and then Arthur, it's Britt himself, who starts tweeting, "I've probably played my last down as a Titan." We really haven't heard much from the Titans about it, but this is Kenny Britt finding trouble for himself again.
Yeah, and Britt didn't regret what he said. He had tweeted that the Titans plan to pull the Jared Cook card. Now, what that means is that the Titans chose not to go to arbitration over a franchise tag with Cook, instead letting him get away and move on to St. Louis. In my opinion, the difference here is that Jared Cook never really got the opportunities he deserved in that offense, or that he appeared to deserve to look like he could be a difference maker. Kenny Britt has had every opportunity both on and off the field. And while I will say that certainly his decision making, his, you know, it will be at the forefront of the reason why he is not going to be back in Nashville after the season. This is a contract year. It's also worth mentioning he hasn't been able to stay on the field, and he hasn't been consistent enough and turned into that number one wideout that on paper he appears to be.
Arthur, thank you very much. We'll talk to you a little bit later on in the program. The games are coming up next when we continue on this edition of Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hob Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, the Philadelphia Eagles and Kansas City Chiefs got things underway in Week 3 in Philadelphia with the Thursday night affair and the return of Chiefs head coach Andy Reid to Philadelphia. As is the case each week, we focus on the Sunday and Monday night games in the NFL on Pro Football Weekly. Well, let's start, Hub, with this one. St. Louis at Dallas. This is a little more interesting than the usual games we have in this segment of the show. The Rams and Cowboys have both split their opening games. And in Week 3, they get together in the big D. The Rams will, they'll battle defensively, but this year they have a little more going for them with tight end Jared Cook and rookie wide receiver Tavon Austin. Meanwhile, it's a Romo Dez Bryant show in Dallas. This is going to be an interesting game.
I think it's a fascinating game, and I smell an upset, Wayne. I think the Rams are a team whose arrow is pointing up, and the Cowboys continue to be a team who I'm not sure that anybody knows where they're going. I like Monty Kiffin. I like Rob Marinelli. I think this defense makes more sense than Rob Ryan's, but they don't have the right people playing it. Now, they've been pretty good on defense the first couple weeks. Last week, you know, was a case of just a good Kansas City team at home, and Tony Romo hasn't been able to do enough on the offensive side of the ball. So, fascinating game to watch. I think that if Sam Bradford's going to arrive as an NFL quarterback, this is the kind of game where he needs to make a statement.
The new-look Chargers are in Tennessee for a meeting of one-and-one clubs under new head coach Mike McCoy. How'd the Chargers look a little different now? They put 61 points on the board in two games this season. The Titans, meanwhile, are playing tough defense under new coordinator Greg Williams.
Clearly, Mike McCoy knows what to do with Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers is rejuvenated. Now, unfortunately, he's still throwing those picks in the fourth quarter that'll get you beat. But, he's had them in both games. They did get a big win last week in Philadelphia. Should have won the opener at home against Houston. They really struggle on defense, but Tennessee and Jake Locker's not scaring anybody with the football. And the Tennessee defense, they're playing better, but they can be had. This is another one where I smell an upset.
Couple of 0-2 teams meet in the Metrodome. Vikings home opener in Minneapolis. Cleveland Browns rebuilding, as we speak right now, with the big trade we talked about in the way we hear it. This is kind of interesting. Brandon Whedon, as I mentioned, thumb injury, won't play this week at quarterback. Instead of going with a veteran in Jason Campbell, they'll go with Brian Hoyer at quarterback. Tell us a little bit about the situation.
Yeah, you wonder at this point if Cleveland hasn't written off the season already. You've got a chance to get... and I mentioned this in the way we hear it, both Jadeveon Clowney, arguably, one of the best defensive players to come out of college football in the last 10, 15 years, and a quarterback-rich draft. Could they be thinking we're going to get both, not just one? I don't know. But I think that you see that they don't believe that they've got the quarterback of the future on the roster, and that's what this is about. Vikings are desperate for a win, and I think they'll manage to get one here.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we talked in the way we hear it. They're a troubled franchise at the moment. 0-2, take on the 2-0 New England Patriots. Patriots have been anything but impressive in their two wins, Hub.
They have, but they've had that extra half a week to get ready. They're trying to get healthy. We heard Gronk might be 50-50 for Sunday. Danny Amendola is not going to be there, and that's significant. Zach Sudfeld, Gronkowski's backup at tight end, has had a hamstring problem. But I worry about a New England team, if I'm the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that had struggled and has had three extra days to get ready. So you got to love the team at home at this point, and that's New England.
The 1-1 Arizona Cardinals are on the road for the second time in 3 weeks as they meet the New Orleans Saints in the Superdome. The Saints are 2-0, Hub, and appear to have improved defensively to go along with that potent offense. Cardinals beat Detroit last week in the desert. Can Carson Palmer keep up with Drew Brees in the Big Easy this week?
You know, Wayne, here's the revelation that I've had about the Arizona Cardinals. Bruce Arians can coach. Now, I don't know why I had to wait until this year after he was the NFL Coach of the Year and Assistant Coach of the Year last year to realize that, but he's made this a much better football team. And, yes, I think with him calling the plays, with him getting the job done, on offense for the Cardinals, they're a vastly improved football team. Not good enough to win this one, but they're going to be competitive every week.
Well, the team they beat last week, Detroit 1-1. The Lions are in Washington taking on the 0-2 Redskins. Lions coming off that road loss at Arizona. As we mentioned, Skins were blasted, Hub, and Green Bay. That was 24-0 at halftime. It was 31-0 before the Skins ever got on track. Now, this week, talk out of Washington is RG3 says, hey, I'm going to take the shackles off myself. I'm going to start running the football like I did a year ago and rushed for over 800 yards. Maybe put a spark in that Redskins defense. It'll be interesting to see where they go.
You know, when he has to, and I don't know what Mike Shanahan is telling him about it, but that's the bottom line. RG3 is who he is. Now, there's ways to protect himself playing his game, sliding, getting out of bounds, but trying to stay in the pocket and be something he's not, that has obviously hurt this football team. At the same time, if that defense doesn't play better, I don't know how much it matters what RG3 does.
You know, one preseason playoff hopeful is going to start the season 0-3. The New York Giants travel to Carolina where they face the 0-2 Panthers. Yeah, the Panthers were being talked about during the preseason as a team that could make a run of the playoffs. Hey, they were my surprise team to make the run of the playoffs. Giants have been outscored 77-54 in their losses at Dallas and to the Broncos. Panthers have dropped two tight games in the first 2 weeks of the season, Hub.
Well, and that's the key, Wayne. The Panthers could be 2-0, maybe should be 2-0. They're not. The Giants should be 0-2. As a matter of fact, if you could get deductions for style, they should be 0-3, even though they only played two games. So I think at home, you got to like the Carolina Panthers in this one.
All right, you got Buffalo at the New York Jets, NFC or AFC Eastern Division matchup. It seems to me like Buffalo has a little bit more going for them right now.
I would agree. Now, these are the two teams that have given New England all they can handle, but Buffalo, I think, actually played them tougher and showed more. And then to get the big last-minute, come-from-behind win with E.J. Manuel throwing the touchdown pass, I like the Buffalo Bills and what they're doing right now. I think they may be a year away from serious playoff consideration, but they're a fascinating team to watch. And the Jets, to me, I give them credit for playing tough defense against the Patriots, but they still got a world of trouble.
The 2-0 Seattle Seahawks stay home to entertain the 0-2 Jacksonville Jaguars, who might be one of the worst teams in pro football. Jags have been outscored, Hub, 47-11, while the Seahawks come off a pulse-setting pounding of the 49ers last Sunday night at home. Is Seattle the best team in the NFC right now?
They are, and I have a very brief comment about this game. This is once every 3-4 years the NFL needs a slaughter rule, and they're going to need one here.
All right, the Monday night affair, an old AFC West rivalry. The Oakland Raiders visit the Denver Broncos. Do we need a slaughter rule on this one, too?
Maybe. How is Denver going to react to the loss of Ryan Clady? That's the big question here. Terrell Pryor has been interesting, but he's not really playing quarterback. He's kind of playing that running quarterback position you saw at Ohio State. They can't stay up with the Denver Broncos. The question is, how ugly is it going to be?
All right, coming up, we start breaking down the big games this weekend on Pro Football Weekly. We resume with our regular season edition of Pro Football Weekly and welcome Arthur Arkush, NFC North reporter, NFL writer for USA Today Sports Weekly, back to the program. Couple of interesting games, Arthur. Let's start first off, Green Bay at Cincinnati. The Packers' high-flying offense heads into Cincinnati where the Bengals sport arguably the league's best defensive front four. If given time, Aaron Rodgers can pick apart any secondary. It remains to be seen. He's already been sacked 6 times this season in the first 2 games. I think the crux to this battle, guys, and how I guess we'll start with you, is that matchup of that restructured Packers offensive line against the front four of this Cincinnati Bengals club.
You know, you would think so, but I remember talking so much about that on opening weekend when the Bengals went into Chicago, and that defensive line didn't show me all that much. I watched them against Pittsburgh, last week in the night game, and they created some occasional pressure against a horrible offensive line in Pittsburgh, but that wasn't really the Steelers' biggest problem. So I like the Packers from guard to guard, and I think Barclay probably will get the job done, outside. Can Bakhtiari handle Michael Johnson? That's what this thing is going to come down to, and most likely. And, I think if he does, Cincinnati's defense is a little vulnerable. They're soft deep over the middle. They're soft at safety. And with the explosion of that Packers offense, Arthur, I think that, can the Cincinnati score enough points to stay with the Packers?
Yeah, I certainly have my doubts, and I will just quickly say, after the first possession for Bakhtiari and Barclay against the Redskins, they struggled initially against Kerrigan and Arakpo. They really played well after that, so I think that will certainly be one area to watch. But I think what you said, the middle of the field for the Cincinnati defense is where I look for Aaron Rodgers to attack. I think for Michael Finley, he's going to have an opportunity for a big game, because I just don't think the Bengals have linebackers who can run and cover. We've seen that as an issue in the first 2 weeks, and I expect that to continue. And you can't really mention the Bengals without mentioning Andy Dalton. So good against the Bears, really pretty mediocre against the Steelers. So I think until we know exactly what the Bengals have in Andy Dalton, we won't know if they're going to be able to make good on these big Super Bowl predictions that some are making for this team.
Yeah, Arthur, on that Monday night game, I thought Dalton was kind of rattled early. He was almost like he was too hyped up for that game. His passes were high, they were off target, that type of thing.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, he completed almost 80% against the Bears and looked really good. And then I agree with you. I mean, we know that he has not fared well against Pittsburgh, and it looked like it was getting off to that same start. He did calm down just enough in the second half. Of course, he got some production out of both of his rookies, Gio Bernard and Tyler Eifert. Those will be two more big names to watch as they as they face Green Bay.
Eddie Lacy not expected to play, the Green Bay rookie running back. James Starks, who came on so well last week, gets another start in this ball game this week in Cincinnati for the Packers. Packers and Bengals in Cincinnati. Meanwhile, the aforementioned Chicago Bears take to the road for the first time this year. After a couple of tight home wins, they head to Pittsburgh where they face the 0-2 Steelers. Hub, this just, looking at it on paper, that's a bad spot for the Bears. Steelers going to go 0-3?
Well, you would think not. Never. Not with Mike Tomlin. In fact, it's the first time Mike Tomlin's ever been 2 games under .500 as a coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I got to tell you guys, That's a bad Steeler team. I'm looking at that team. I'm looking at the depth chart. I'm trying to figure out who the talents are. When you start to dig a little bit, you realize you don't know who these guys are. I mean, you talk about Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders and Jericho Cotchery. That's your wide receiver core. They're okay. You know, they're guys that they're hopeful about, but who haven't done it yet in the league. You look over at defense, and with Larry Foote going down, they got a couple rookies at linebacker. The Casey Hampton is gone. Aaron Smith is long gone. I don't know. I know that the Steelers have always been able to rebuild on the fly, but Arthur, I think this time they got caught a little bit short, and then you get the injury to Maurkice Pouncey. Here's a team that has invested, I think two number ones, a two and a four in their offensive line in the last 2 years, and they're getting worse instead of better. Now those kids may still make a really good line once they get Pouncey back and they all get healthy, but right now they can't seem to do anything.
And you hit on one of my two keys for the game. I think the trenches is going to decide this one. Obviously, the Steelers' offensive line injured and struggling, but the Bears' defensive line, what was supposed to be a strong part of this club, has really done next to nothing in the first two games. So can they take advantage of Pittsburgh's sort of meager protection and really get after Ben Roethlisberger? They're going to have to. They're going to have to pressure him to have a good performance. And then, of course, on the other side, the Bears' offensive line has exceeded all expectations thus far. But we have to mention they haven't seen anything quite like Dick LeBeau's zone blitzing defense. They've had two even fronts that like to create pressure with their front four. Now they're going to see Dick LeBeau throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at him. We'll see how they can handle that confusion, if they can stay poised and manage to keep Cutler upright once again.
Chicago at Pittsburgh on Sunday night. Arthur, we'll talk to you again next week. More breakdowns of NFL games this weekend when we return to Pro Football Weekly. Along with Hub Arkish, I'm Wayne Larrabee. We continue with this Week 3 edition of Pro Football Weekly and bring in Eric Edholm, a staff writer for Shutdown Corner, YahooSports.com. Welcome back into the show, Eric. The first game to discuss here in this segment, the Miami Dolphins fashion themselves as a postseason contender. Well, Week 3 may be a barometer as the highly regarded but banged up Atlanta Falcons pay a visit to South Florida. Hub, Miami is 2-0. The Falcons are 1-1, and the key injuries we talked about in the way we hear it have chipped away at the armor of the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, now I think the Falcons are still a really good football team, and the question is, will they run enough to get the passing game on track? Because with those receivers and Matt Ryan, they're going to scare a lot of teams. I'm not sold on the Miami Dolphins offense by any stretch. Ryan Tannehill's a better player than I thought he was, but even with the new weapons, I don't think they're going to run the football all that well. What this comes down to me is the Dolphins are a much better defensive football team than anybody realizes, Eric, and I think without Steven Jackson, if the Falcons can't establish any kind of a running game, Cameron Wake could be in Matt Ryan's lap all day long, and I think the Dolphins can surprise some people with that defense.
Yeah, that front four has been pretty darn good. I really like the way they've transitioned that defense. And, count me among the critics this offseason of guys like Danelle Ellerbe and Philip Wheeler. Like the players, just thought they spent way too much on them. Same thing with Mike Wallace on the offensive side of the ball. I just wasn't in love with a lot of the moves they made in the offseason. I thought they were a team on the verge, but first 2 weeks, two wins on the road, you really can't argue. And I agree with you on that defense. They're good, and they're getting healthy in the secondary.
All right, that's Atlanta at Miami. It'll be a barometer for the Miami Dolphins. Meanwhile, a couple of 1-1 teams get together in San Francisco, where the Niners come in off an embarrassing loss at Seattle and face the Indianapolis Colts, who at 1-1 get a boost with the acquisition of running back Trent Richardson from the Cleveland Browns. Homecoming for Andrew Luck and Kobe Fleener, both Stanford products, returning to the Bay Area, Hub.
Well, yeah, there's a lot going on here. I guess the first question is, what can you really do with Trent Richardson, who, in essence, will have, one practice? Let's see, did he get there on Thursday on time? He may have half a practice under his belt. He'll have a playbook. It's not hard to say go left, go right, go off guard, go off tackle. He'll be in the game. I'm sure he'll get some carries. But in fairness, you got to give the guy a couple weeks. We know that Pep Hamilton is the big reason that he was brought there. They figure if they can establish a pounding, dominant running game, it makes things that much better for Andrew Luck. It's just not going to happen that quick. Now, I do like Fleener a lot. He's arriving now to go along with Dwayne Allen. You got to love Andrew Luck. I don't totally trust the Colts' defense in this situation, and Eric, going to be a very angry San Francisco 49er team. They were embarrassed last Sunday night on national television. I wasn't shocked that they lost. I was shocked that they were embarrassed, and I think Harbaugh is going to have them ready this week.
Yeah, that's the worst that Colin Kaepernick has looked, I think, in the NFL. And you know, Kaepernick's a little nicked up. He's got a foot injury. They went from having one guy on the injured list last week with LaMichael James to 10 this week, including their entire defensive front. They lose Ian Williams, the nose tackle for the season. Kind of an underrated loss. That said, that front seven, Alden Smith on the outside, even if he's a little banged up with a back injury, the guys like Ray McDonald on the inside, Justin Smith against the Colts offensive line, I don't like that matchup for Indy whatsoever.
Well, and you mentioned, I mean, we talked about what we consider to be a very good front four in Cincinnati, front four. But when you talk San Francisco defensive front, you're talking seven, and it's probably the best in football. But, Hub, I got to tell you something about the Niners. The last 2 years, they've been awfully good, but they've been very healthy the last 2 years. And this year, it started in the offseason with the loss of Crabtree, the wide receiver, to an injury. You know, this is the type of thing that happens to most teams. It hasn't happened to the Niners in the last couple of years. We're really going to see their depth this season.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, and there's no question about it. But, you know, I wonder about, so you say you go from one guy on the list to 10 guys. Of the 9 new ones, I wonder how many of them are physically hurt and how many are mentally wounded. You know, I'm not questioning anybody playing with the injury list. I'm just saying when you have a game like that, suddenly everything feels a lot worse. And sometimes even if you're only going at 80-90%, the chance to make up for it is a powerful healer.
Indianapolis at San Francisco in the NFL this weekend. Stay tuned. The headliner on Pro Football Weekly is up next. The headliner, an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. The 2-0 Houston Texans travel to Baltimore to face the 1-1 defending champs, the Baltimore Ravens. It's the return of longtime Ravens safety Ed Reed, who is now with the Texans. And, Hub, that should spark some emotion in this one.
You would think. Now, you know, a lot of people are going to make a big deal out of it, and you know, I'm sure it matters, but I'm not sure it's the biggest matchup in this game. And we say the return of Ed Reed. It's not just the return of Ed Reed to Baltimore, but hopefully the return of Ed Reed to the Texans lineup into complete health, because he's been a very slow starter this year after the hip surgery during the offseason and has not really made an impact yet. There's no question that that's somewhere where the Texans not only wanted to get better, they let Glover Quinn get away in free agency, but they wanted Reed to bring that veteran championship know-how from Baltimore that they thought could get their very talented young football team over the hump. But you know, when you look at the way the Texans have played early, they really almost got beat on the opening Monday night in San Diego. They needed a furious second half comeback. And then they played from behind a chunk of the day last week at home versus the Tennessee Titans. Now, they did win both football games. They still are capable of putting up a lot of points on offense. They're really deep in weapons. Arian Foster appears to be coming back. Ben Tate's rejuvenated. We don't know about the status of Andre Johnson, who suffered a concussion last Sunday, but this DeAndre Hopkins kid was the game winner for them against the Titans. So you've got a ton of weapons on this Houston team as they go to a Baltimore team whose defense was much better at home last week, but that was the Cleveland Browns. So we just don't know how to measure this Raven defense yet.
You know, the other thing, you look at the Texans, their first team since the 1970 merger to win each of their first two games of the season on the final play.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past two games of the second half and overtime, Matt Schaub, 40 of 61, that's 65.6%, 445 yards, 4 touchdowns, only 1 interception. You know, they are doing it through the air, averaging 322 passing yards per game. But, Hub, aren't they one of the better running teams in this league, the Houston Texans?
Well, they should be, and they usually are. And this is where we get back to Arian Foster. Remember, he started training camp on the PUP list. They activated him about 2 weeks in. He saw limited duty. They're saying they're trying to pace him. He's saying he's unhappy about it. He says he's ready to go. And then you got his backup, Ben Tate, who everybody's been waiting for to become the next Michael Turner. Remember what happened with Turner in San Diego? He couldn't get out from behind LT. Finally got the big free agency deal in Atlanta, became a Pro Bowler for a few years. A lot of people think Tate has that kind of ability, but he's been injury prone and not very productive the last couple of years. Well, he had 9 carries, I want to say, for over 60 or 70 yards last week. So if you put Foster and Tate together, it should be one of the best running games in the NFL.
And, Hub, you mentioned Houston's kind of struggled through two inferior opponents in the first 2 weeks of the season. They'll have to play a lot better, even against this new-look Baltimore Ravens team. Baltimore at home under John Harbaugh, 34-7. That's an 83% winning percentage at home. And in September, they've been outstanding. They've won 13 consecutive home games in September, 3 of those against Houston.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a great matchup. It's why it's our game of the week. Although I got to tell you, Wayne, we're talking about a different Baltimore team. I think that they did a nice job of reloading. They fixed some of the losses that they had. But at the end of the day, I just don't see where Joe Flacco has the targets. This passing game that was not really one of the most dynamic in the NFL prior to this offseason and all the free agency losses is one that I think is really going to struggle now. And defensively, this is where I say you get a multiple threat like the Houston Texans. You saw what Denver did to them that opening week of the season. Yeah, they're going to be better at home than they are on the road, but that's why this is so fascinating to me, this game. I think John Harbaugh is one of the best coaches in the NFL. Does he have the talent with this Denver team to get them turned around again? This is the test we need. I don't think Cleveland told us much last week.
Joe Flacco, 4-1 as a starter against the Texans. 7 touchdowns, 3 interceptions over the course of those games. The postseason hero from a year ago, Torrey Smith, averaging 88.5 receiving yards per game so far this season. So all the, I guess all the barrels are loaded for this one. In our headliner is the Houston Texans, 2-0, travel to Baltimore to take on the defending world champion Ravens, who are off to a 1-1 start. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on this edition of Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Here's this week's Publisher's Pen with Hub Arkush. Hub?
Wayne, we talked about it in the way we hear it, and I just want to touch on it a little bit more because it is so rare in the National Football League. The blockbuster trade, the Cleveland Browns, just 2 games into his sophomore season, trade the number 3 overall pick in the draft, Trent Richardson, a running back, to the Indianapolis Colts. The Indianapolis Colts give up the most prized of all possessions in the NFL, a first-round draft choice, to get him. And we hear it from fans constantly. Why aren't there more trades in the National Football League? Why doesn't this happen more often? And, you know, there's a number of answers for it. Here you had the perfect storm. You had one franchise that saw it was going nowhere. That's the Cleveland Browns. They've got a completely new front office in place. They're a team that wants to contend immediately. They've got some young talent on defense. They figure if they can stockpile some high draft picks, maybe they'll be active in free agency after the season. They can turn it around very quickly. But it wasn't going to happen with Richardson because he wasn't a right fit for what the new coaching staff wants to do. Now, on the other side, you've got the Indianapolis Colts, who were in that position just a season ago, but their brand new front office had a great draft. They got a franchise quarterback in Andrew Luck, and that's something the Browns may be looking for with these extra picks that they now have. They went to the playoffs. They're struggling to get back this year. They haven't looked as good. The GM says, hey, maybe this guy is the difference. Maybe this is the guy we can build the offense around in addition to our franchise quarterback, so he pulls the trigger. The problem is there's going to be tremendous pressure on both Ryan Grigson and Mike Lombardi. One of them's going to fail and possibly lose a job over this trade, Wayne.
Thanks very much, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Randy Meyer is the producer-engineer of Pro Football Weekly. Pro Football Weekly originates in the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.